Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast.
The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Aaron Gordon. Before we get to Aaron, here's some announcements. TravelTalesPodcast.com. That's where you can find all things Travel Tales Podcast. You can see stories that I've written, some stories that some of the guests have written. You can see photos of the guests. You can see links to their social media. You can see links to our social media, which is, of course, Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Follow us there. Let's get those numbers up. We have a Facebook page you can follow us on. And while you're following and subscribing, let's talk streaming services. Most of you listen to us through streaming services like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. And if you're on any of those, how about giving us a good rating there? That helps more people find the show, boosts our presence, and that's a cool thing for you to do. If you think you'd be right for the show, or you know somebody who might be right for the show, or maybe you want to write me to ask travel questions or tell me I'm awesome, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Aaron Gordon is the founder of earth2editorial.com. That's Earth T.O. Editorial. It's a site, a blog, with travel guides and recommendations that really tries to focus on authentic travel. Maybe it's a little off the beaten path. Maybe it's a little slower than your regular travel of seeing a lot of sights all at once. She tries to dig a little deeper into a destination. And she tries to counter things like over-tourism and animal abuse and that kind of stuff. And Erin actually reached out to me and told me her story. I checked out Earth 2 Editorial and I thought she'd be a good fit. And she was. She was very lovely, very pleasant, very charming. She lives in Massachusetts and lived in Korea for a year teaching English. And even though she had come from a writing background, it was that time spent in Korea that really lit the spark about starting her own travel blog. So it was a pleasure to meet her, and I'm glad we got to chat. I think you'll like our chat as well. From earth2editorial.com, here's Aaron Gordon.
So it's Aaron and spelled E-R-Y-N.
That Aaron must be spelled wrong all the time.
All the time. Absolutely. I think my parents were going for uniqueness and it's just kind of become a hassle.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Mom and Dad. Exactly. But you, Now I got to correct people the rest of my life.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Aaron, are you a Massachusetts native? That's where you're talking to me from.
Yes, yeah. I was born in Rhode Island and have lived in Massachusetts for the better part of my life. Went to college here and essentially started working in Boston. So,
classic mess hole, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a phrase, I don't know if you've been to Rhode Island before, but it's smallest state in the US, and there's a little funny phrase where Rhode Islanders never leave the state. Kind of the same thing with Massachusetts too, to be honest.
My family's from the East Coast. My grandmother is from Worcester. My grandmother.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're not that far.
My parents went to UMass, so I'm very familiar.
Oh,
been to
absolutely.
The Cape, and it's summer. How come you're not out at the Cape?
I was actually there yesterday.
Aha! So. See?
Yeah, you got me.
Typical. So masshole. Yeah. So utterly masshole.
Isn't that terrible? I'm just a cliche. It's crazy.
Well, I'm sure it was beautiful. Was it fun?
It was stunning. Actually, here is the one non-cliche. That was, I think that was the first time I'd actually spent a weekend in the Cape ever. Funny enough, even though I'm a traveler and I've always loved visiting new places, I have yet to really discover my backyard. So, you know, you've got your typical spots that you go to frequently, but there's also a whole lot in New England that I just have not seen yet, which is so crazy. So
I know. Well, I mean, when you're used to it, I mean, it's like you're pulled away by the exotic places and then just
Yeah. You just think, oh, well, I'll get there eventually. And then, you know, eventually never comes. So,
but the Cape, I would figure, I mean, did your family take vacations when you were little? Did you go someplace? Did you summer somewhere?
We did. We summered actually in Rhode Island, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Newport? So, were you up by Newport?
Newport, Narragansett. We're a big fan, big collective fan of Narragansett and like Scarborough Beach. So to each his own, right? I think both are fantastic, but the Cape really, I have to say, is absolutely stunning. It's a special place.
It is beautiful. Earth to Editorial. First of all, explain the title and what exactly did you mean by it and how long have you had the site?
Yeah, thank you. So the site's been around for about 2 years now. I decided on Earth to Editorial because I kind of had this funny play on words. I'm a 90s kid and I remember back in the day, anytime that you were making a little remark to somebody or trying to get their attention, you'd be like, Earth to Aaron or Earth to Mike. So this was kind of a funny little, I guess, jibe on nostalgia and saying that we could be calling to these places or these places might be calling to us. So that's how the name came.
So the editorial part means that you were going to write about it or was that?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So I started off as a travel journalist and then moved into more of a content creator role. My goal was to create guides that were more on the local side. And then it eventually evolved into more regenerative tourism, trying to give back to the place that you go visit and stewardship. So more about locality, but also being a good traveler in a way.
So how much of the site is, would you say percentage wise, is guides and writing about it, a place? And how much is like you, are you like considered a travel agent or, you know, a tour company?
Yeah. It's fully a blog. So I'm not a travel agent. It was essentially the goal was to create these guides for individuals free of use and be able to make it accessible for people who wanted to get more of a, another option beyond the typical itinerary, you know, rather than say, okay, we're going to Paris. Here's how to get the best sights of the Eiffel Tower. It's going to be more about where do the locals hang out? What are some cool bars that you can see? You know, maybe you can go on a Hemingway tour and see like all the,
right. all the places he drank, everywhere he drank.
Yeah, exactly. So just giving an alternative to what might be the typical norm, let's say.
That's like when you go to Cuba or the Keys or anywhere, everything is like, yeah, Hemingway drank here.
So funny? Yeah, he really like, yeah, that was his mark. It's like,
yeah, the man liked a cocktail. He really did.
He absolutely did. Yeah.
So is it just you writing it or do you have contributors who help you out with this?
Yeah, I have some freelance contributors, but it's mostly me. I'd say 95% me, to be honest. So I'm pretty heavily digging into it. I go to destinations and I take more of a slow travel approach to my experiences. Do a lot of talking and asking questions. So I try to get that intel. And that's kind of the motive there. I really want to make sure there's an authentic side to it that people trust when they read.
And now when you say get the intel, is it more like, you sit down, you meet some locals and do you ask like, where do they go? Where do you like to eat? Or do you hang with them for a few days and follow them around? Or how does that work?
You know, that's funny. It does kind of depend, but I'd say a bit of both in certain instances. I've had some experiences where I've just serendipitously met some people who were really cool and we ended up spending a few days together or just doing stuff together. Like for example, in Thailand, I met a couple there who were so wonderful. And if you've been to Thailand, you know Thai hospitality is unmatched. So they were like, oh yeah, we're going to go to this great restaurant tomorrow and we're going to go to the mountains. And do you want to go to the jungle? And I'm like, yeah. So why not? And sometimes you get these experiences just because they happen, you know, and that's wonderful. And so I try to encourage that as much as possible. And I like to practice what I preach. So when I can, I'll try to take some opportunities to see the local side of places. But to answer your question, it also can come down to questions. So I've also just been that kind of person who will like sit up next to somebody and just be like, hey, so, you know, what do you do for fun around here?
And speak into the microphone because I'm recording all this.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the first writing gig you got? You said were you writing for some magazines or newspapers or what were you doing out of school?
Yeah. I love that. So I kind of got into travel journalism, not by accident, but it was not necessarily expected. I'd always been a writer in marketing. And so I'd done a lot of copywriting throughout my 20s. But I finally reached this point where during the pandemic, I wanted to change, a really significant change. So I moved to South Korea to become an English teacher. That was certainly a change. Yeah. And it was a wonderful, wonderful time. I loved my life there, but it was very, very different, of course, from what I was used to, especially working in a different culture, in a different, you know, dealing with taxes, for example, is very, very different when you have a language barrier. And, you know, there's just these little nuances of life. So I started to write stories about my life as an expat there. And my first story was picked up by Wanderlust, the magazine in the UK. That one was about royal cuisine, cuisine from the royal family in the Joseon dynasty. So that was a little bit more of a historical piece, but that was my first one.
Well, that's amazing. So first of all, how deep into the pandemic were you? I mean, how many was this 2020 still, or was it 2021? And did you have to quarantine when you went there? And how did it all work?
It was wild. Yes. So at the start of the pandemic, I was unfortunately laid off, and I was kind of thinking about, well, what's my next step? I wasn't necessarily very happy in my current career trajectory, so I was trying to take the time and the space, the headspace, to think really deeply about what I wanted to do next. So this is the moment where I thought, you know, I really need a shock in my life. I'm kind of eager to get out there and do something different. So I started to look for opportunities in teaching. I had been TEFL certified, so I wanted to put that to use. And let's see, it was around the start of 2021 when I officially moved. So it was, I'm trying to remember at that time in the US, I think the restrictions were a little bit more lax, but in Korea, they were still pretty intense. Anyone who had moved or was flying into South Korea and they were leaving the airport had to quarantine for 2 weeks. So you could either choose to quarantine at a like state regulated hotel room, which is what a lot of people did if they were just visiting for like fun. But because I was living there as an employee, I had an apartment through my school. So I just quarantined at my apartment, which was actually great. But the experience was really funny. So every single day I had to, as soon as I left the airport, I had to put a GPS app on my phone so they could tell if I left my apartment. And if I left my apartment, my phone would start buzzing. So they were really serious about it. Every single day when I took out my trash, I had to take out my trash in like biohazard bags.
Oh, wow.
So they were not playing around.
Was Korea your first choice, or was just what was available when you went to get a teaching thing?
It was my first choice. I really was curious about Korean culture. I had some Korean friends, not only in Massachusetts, but in Rhode Island. And I thought it seemed like a really cool place to go for my first trip. Like, I hadn't, at that time, I hadn't left the US in over 7 years. And so I was like, you know, this just seems like a cool place. I've heard a lot of good things about it. I've got a good feeling. So what have I got to lose?
Were you in Seoul or somewhere else?
I was right outside of Seoul. The city was called Bucheon, and it's kind of like a satellite city. A lot of commuters live there, and they go into Seoul for work.
Okay. So, yeah, I've talked to a number of people who've done these, you know, teaching English overseas things. Yeah. What is your, like, weekly schedule? Like, how many days a week is this? I mean, is it every single day? I mean, is it, how many hours a day are you doing this? Is it live classrooms? Is it Zoom? How does this work?
Yeah. So for my school, it was all live. I went into after my quarantine, and I was able to like move around freely. I went to a classroom every single day, and I taught from 9 to around 6 o'clock.
Oh.
I've heard it was a private school, and I think the experiences at hagwons or private schools in South Korea can be varied depending on where you go. I had a wonderful experience. I absolutely loved my school. My students were really wonderful. And I felt like the school was really well balanced out between the experience of working there and being a teacher.
Oh, that's great.
I worked with students who were 7 years old. So that was my morning class from around like 9 to 12.
Adorable.
Absolutely adorable. The coolest kids ever. They were so funny. And just keep in mind, Mike, like I was also coming from a corporate background. So like being able to teach kids was kind of coming back to innocence for me also, you know, where I was like, wow, you know, like this is such a nice, like, this is just so great.
Now, are students in Korea, I think they're required to learn English, right? I mean, are they like Japan or is it different?
Yes. So they do have English requirements, I believe, starting in maybe it's middle or high school level. When you're a young kid, this is a little bit more extracurricular. You know, if your parents are a little bit more eager to get you on board and start doing that soon, they put you into a private school, which was essentially where I was working. And then as well for the older students that I saw and I'd be working with from 12 to 6, those were usually students who were in high school or middle school, and they were coming in after their regular classes, basically.
So was this a one-year commitment?
Yes, it was a one-year commitment. And sorry, I'm just going to move this.
That's okay.
Yes, it was a one-year commitment, and it was essentially something where I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll come back for another year or not. And I at the end of this, I was starting to move in more into this writing profession, and it was really something that I truly wanted to do. So I decided to take another leap.
Okay. Now, give me your biggest culture shock moment when you first moved there. Something happened or some kind of incident and you went, ooh, we are not in mass hole anymore. We are not in mass hole turf anymore.
Yeah. You know, that's really funny. I know that people say that Americans are very loud, but I didn't realize how I didn't realize how quiet and maybe let's say aware of other people.
Yeah. Considerate, I believe is
considerate.
The word. Yeah.
Fabulous. Exactly. Considerate people are in South Korea. I mean, if you go onto a subway, it's silent.
Yeah.
So,
same with Japan. It's amazing.
Yeah. And you know, as opposed to the subway in Boston, where it's like chaos,
right?
And people are blasting music and boom boxes and stuff, which, you know, it's got its own vibe, but this kind of thing just would never fly in Seoul.
No.
So, yeah. And what's also kind of funny is that the older generation will absolutely yell at you if you, if you do something like that. So, you kind of do want to be on your best behavior or else grandma's going to like come scream at you. So.
Oh yeah. We were, I think this was Taiwan, but it was the same kind of deal that I was with a buddy of mine and he was eating like an ice cream bar. Some old lady just tisk. They ate no, you know, and just made him throw it away. Like, ooh, sorry. Yeah.
He's like, oof. Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And you really feel like, oh, man.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm getting...
You're shamed. Sure. Yeah. For sure.
Absolutely.
That's funny.
So that was a bit surprising.
Okay. So then did you, after the year is up, did you want to come home or just like, I want to just keep going throughout Asia and see everything?
Oh, you know, if I could have, I would have. It was also when I was returning back from Korea, I ended up going to Thailand, which was fantastic.
Awesome.
But I did have a couple of engagements. It was just the, for whatever reason, it was after the pandemic. So everyone was trying to get married. So I had, I think maybe 6 weddings to go to in the US after that.
Right.
And so I thought, okay, well, I'll just come back for another year. And, yeah.
You're at an age when your friends start to all get married in waves.
Oh, it was, yes, it was that. And it was also the fact that, like, you know, so many of them had wanted to get married in 2020, 2021.
Oh, right.
Couldn't.
They put it off.
Yeah. So there was this mad grab for,
for wedding halls and everything.
Basically. Yeah.
Okay. So while you were traveling, so you say you started the idea, you started kind of blogging about your experiences in Korea when you were there.
Yeah.
Was the, after that, you're like, okay, that year's up. And you're like, I'm digging this blogging thing. I'm going to take, was the idea for your site already in your head or did it just kind of evolve after that?
Oh, it evolved. It's taken on different shapes because, you know, a big part of the thing is I do still consider myself a relatively new traveler, even though I've gone to a lot of places and I feel incredibly privileged to do that. You know, I have a little bit of, let's say, imposter syndrome when I'm talking to someone else who's like, oh, I've been traveling since I was 14 years old and I've been to all these different places. And, you know, I really started to heavily travel in my late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So this has evolved big time. It started off originally as more of like a diary, honestly, just because I was so enthralled by these like crazy experiences that I just didn't realize were out there that I just wanted to put them out somewhere. So that's really how it started initially. But then I realized, well, who really wants to read my diary besides my mom and maybe my aunt? So then I started moving into more of a guide for solo travelers. And then I found a niche that I really enjoyed, which is culture and heritage. And that eventually evolved more into the regenerative tourism or let's say quote unquote good tourism. So I think that that's kind of where we're at now, but.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, one last thing about Korea before we move on to something else. So you were on one of those satellites. So you're about 45 minutes out of Seoul, right?
Yes.
Did you see, so my friend who was Korean here, he would take me to Koreatown in LA and he would tell me, and he would go back to Korea all the time, went to see his family. And he would tell me about these places where, because once you leave the bars in Seoul, you know, they close at like, I don't know, 11 or something, you know, kind of early-ish.
Yeah.
Or no, what the train stopped running at like 11 or something. And if these guys, part of their job is to go out drinking with their boss, and some of these guys go out almost every night. And if they miss the last train, they're screwed, you know? So a car is too expensive to take all the way back. And so they basically crash at these places in the city where they could just, it's like a, you know, they can get a bed, they get their clothes washed and just basically to pass out. So we saw all these drunken guys in suits at the end of the night. You're just stumbling into cabs and trying
so
desperately
true.
To make the late trains.
Yep. So true. It's so the thing that you're referring to is like when you go out with your coworkers or your boss is called a huishik. And I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, by the way, to the authentic
to
Koreans.
To all the Koreans but, listening.
Yeah. They're like, oh,
no,
that was not correct.
Stick to English, they said.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely something that is, I don't know, I guess you could consider it forced fun, you know, and it does happen pretty frequently. So yeah, there are these, I don't know. I guess you could kind of consider it like a full service hotel where, yes, they're fairly inexpensive too. So if you need to have a place to crash, you'll go there. They'll have all the toiletries that you need and, basically take care of you for a couple of hours until you have to go to work.
And then they get up and go back to the work. It's pretty wild.
So,
Like it's not worth it to go all the way out of town. So you just kind of crash in town.
Yep.
And their wives are probably like, you stay there. We don't need you drunk, stumbling back in here at 1 a.m.
Pretty much. Yeah. But there is this one other thing that I thought was like super, like such a great idea actually. In Korea, if you drive, let's say, so you go to a bar
And you start drinking, you're not going to drive back home. So there's actually a service where you can rent, you can have somebody come pick you up and drive your car for you back to your house.
Oh, right. Yeah. I've heard of that. They drive your own car.
So sick.
And they find their own way back. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, it definitely helps that they've got a great public transportation system there. So someone can pretty much get to you no matter where you are. But I thought that was such a genius idea. Yeah,
that is a really good idea. Why don't we do that here? Probably like liability and somebody gets sued and driving somebody else's car. Yeah.
Perhaps a bit of that, you know, and I think also our infrastructure just isn't, it's not it, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
now you'd be stuck out in the burbs with no way to get back to the city, you know.
Pretty much, yeah. You go drop somebody off at home and now you're, I don't know, like 2 hours from where you're supposed to be and you have no way of getting back there.
Right, so. Exactly. Yeah. That's funny. Okay. So moving on, you come back and you decide you're going to make this site and like you're going to make guides and do all that stuff. Was there an angle? Because a lot of people do that. Was there, what was your specific take? And you talked about authentic travel and that kind of thing. Was that your thing or slower travel? That's a thing now too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Part of it was honestly self-serving. It's just that I loved to write and I wanted to have an outlet for that. But it has evolved into something a little bit more about a sense of responsibility that I think travelers have. So particularly in Thailand, and I think that this is a familiar topic for many travelers already, but there is a pretty significant, let's say, animal tourism there with Asian elephants. And really, that was the first time that even though I had this wonderful experience in Korea right before, and I was like, wow, travel's amazing. I'm going to do it all the time. And then I went to Thailand and saw like how severely animals were being abused in the tourism industry. And then I had this immediate juxtaposition of like, oh, also, this is a little bad. and this was actually very important for me because it did help refine my niche in tourism and writing. So a big part of the reason that it's evolved is because I wanted to create guides that were not just about like the hidden gems and like, oh, finding something that's a little different than the norm, but about helping people who want to travel do well while they travel. So not everybody has the resources or the knowledge to know, let's say, what is a tourist trap. True. Same thing goes for like, they don't really know how to give back to a place that they go visit. And as a new traveler like myself in my late 20s, I was just going to places and had not a clue what a place needed. I didn't know what over tourism was at all. So this was an idea where it eventually became more about how do we take control and take ownership of the sense of responsibility? We all deserve to travel. We should absolutely see the world. But on the other hand, if we don't do it responsibly, we might damage the places that we see.
Right.
So that's eventually like how it transitioned into a little bit more of a community, let's say.
Well, I think my hardest thing, you know, I've thought about like writing down, okay, you know, a guide or like these things you should do, but then you get into thing, okay, do I talk about accommodations and hotels? Do I go into the restaurant space and where to eat and do it? And then it starts, you know, this is getting overwhelming. So
did
you narrow it down? It's like, okay, I'm not, hotels are not my thing, or like restaurants I'm not going to bother with.
Yeah. So I do actually talk about both. I'm not specifically dedicated to one or the other, but I think that they are, let's say they're packaged into tourism. When people go somewhere, they need to sleep and they need to eat. So when I make a recommendation for a place, it's either a place that I've been to or that has followed some sort of, let's say, sustainability. I usually recommend either locally owned places or places that are, let's say, not a huge hotel conglomerate. Again, it's kind of going into this thing of, okay, well, I don't necessarily need to make a list of affiliate links, but I do want to make a curated selection for people who are trying to make a good choice.
Right. So, well, I've done some, I don't know if you're doing media trips as well now. And so those, I've been on a few of those and it's really, you know, they show you all these different places. And even though if it's not your thing, I almost felt like this kind of obligation was like, well, I guess I should write about it. I mean, they took me to this fancy hotel and I took some photos. Maybe I should mention it. But then you kind of feel obligated. Maybe it's not your thing. I mean, how do you navigate that when you're getting freebies?
That is such a good question. Here's the thing. If I go on a press trip, I will try to ask some probing questions before I go. I know that it's not, it really depends on the place that you're going to and the person that you're talking with. But if I'm, let's say, working with a PR agent or directly with a hotel or tourism board, I want to make sure it's a good fit because, yes, of course, reputation is everything. And I think even now in the age of AI, people want to trust their source, let's say. So I want to make sure that I'm just making a partnership with somebody who's aligned with what I'm trying to talk about. So I will ask some probing questions related to the experiences there, what they're doing to give back to the destination. If it's not a fit, it's not a fit. And that's just it, you know. I don't need to take freebies every week. It's okay. I mean, sure, it would be nice, but I don't think it's totally necessary. And I don't want to get into that position where I feel obligated to say something nice, even if I didn't have a great experience.
Did you ever get to a place and you thought it was going to be kind of on your, I hate the term, but brand, you know, this is kind of like our vibe. And then you got there and it totally wasn't. And now then you're kind of like, this was not the way I thought it was going to be.
Luckily, it hasn't been that bad. No, I've never had an experience where I was like, this is totally not me. Thankfully. But I would say that I've had some experiences where, you know, it might have not been the perfect experience, but luckily I had some other good experiences that I could highlight instead. So let's put it this way. If I've gone on an experience, I would rather not say something negative and just not write about it. Right. I don't want to drag somebody's company. And I also don't want to drag a type of tourism that just, it's not aligned with me, but it might be aligned for somebody else. Right.
Right.
So I'll try to, like I said, get past that point before going on the trip. And then if it comes down to maybe it's not really the right fit, I'll say, okay, well, I did this, wasn't crazy about it, but here's these other things I did that were really cool. And
yeah. Well, authentic could mean a lot of things. I mean, a lot of times when people say, oh, this is a real authentic travel experience, it really only meant that they were off, you know, the main tourist track and maybe in a poorer, less developed country. And it's like, look, this is very authentic. Yeah, but it's also, you know, super poor and, you know, there's no place to stay or eat and it could be dangerous, but it is authentic. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just like, is there a richer or a well-traveled place? Let's say pick one, France. Everybody goes to France, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to go to all the hot Paris or whatever. How do you find the authentic experience in a place that's so built up and so popular, or like Italy or something? How do you do that?
So here's a great thing, Mike, because I think, okay, there is, as you said, there could be various types of authenticity that maybe don't align with every tourist or traveler, but there's also different types of authenticity. Like, you know, for the example of Paris is a multicultural city and they've got they've got people from all over the world living there. The Nigerian French experience is authentic, you know, just as much as like the true, let's say, French experience. So I think
nothing but Senegalese when you're there.
And you know,
it would be authentic for sure.
But that's exactly the point, is that, you know, who am I to say that my one experience is the only authentic thing that you can do there? What I would say is a good criteria for having an authentic experience is trying to get to know that place. So let's say rather than going to 10 different attractions and checking them off a list and just taking some photos for Instagram, let's say you do a tour or some sort of more immersive experience with a topic that you're actually interested in. So if you're going to Paris, you could, like I said, you could talk about the Lost Generation or all of the poets who have called Paris home. Go through art history. You could take a tour of, you could actually go outside of Paris and go to Monet's, I think, I don't know if you'd say chateau, but you could have all these different different experiences that are authentic, you know? And I think it's just about making a relationship with the place you visit.
Did you ever have a guilty pleasure when you think, okay, I'm going to go on this super touristy thing and I know I'm going to hate it, but then you came off and you're like, you know, that was actually kind of cool. That was actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
Can you think of one?
Good question. Yeah, because also I'm not knocking touristy experiences too. Like they're cool as well.
There's a reason they're touristy experiences.
100%. 100%. That's a really good question. But you know, something I really love now that I'm discovering my own backyard, I do really enjoy touristy experiences in New England. So last year, for example, I went up to, Lincoln, New Hampshire, which is kind of like the essential spot to go for fall foliage, which is stunning. It's absolutely beautiful. You have the Kankamangas Highway, which is considered one of the most beautiful highways in the United States. But of course, it's packed. So
sure, of course.
So you do have to kind of deal with the crowds. But if you can get past that and, you know, just like get a nice coffee or cider or something like that and just drive in your car, you can really enjoy the scenery. And I loved that experience. I had a great time.
That's kind of good. And it is beautiful. I mean, you got to give it up. Absolutely. I mean, you got to go, okay, let's go get some lobster and look at the leaves.
Absolutely. But any New Hampshire person would be like, oh, don't go to Lincoln. Like that's the worst spot, you know, but actually I had a great time. So,
right. Well, the world is so big. I mean, did you, like when you started the guide, say, I'm going to like narrow it to say just Europe, or I'm not going to include certain areas just because it's too much, or we want to focus more here? What did you say?
No, I didn't. I probably should have, because I would be less overwhelmed. but no, I started it with any place that I'd been to, and then I started to expand a little bit further out based on the freelance writers I was working with, based on where they lived or they had traveled. So it really just comes down to the writer in Earth 2. You know, it's if we've been there, we'll write about it.
So. Has anybody ever read what you wrote and said and like contacted you and go, no, you got this wrong, and you know, come again, we'll make it better, or you were just like, you're nuts, you don't know what you're talking about?
Yeah, I've never had someone call me nuts, but I
not
I think
until just that, till I did just now
until just now yeah, yeah. So thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, I honestly I don't mind, because I think that I do take feedback on the internet with a grain of salt, but if somebody truly does have some great suggestions or recommendations for tweaking it, I'm all ears. And of course, if you travel somewhere and you've only been there for, let's say, a few months or maybe even a few weeks, you might not have the full scope. You just have a scope of what worked for you and what you liked. And that's the best I can do. But hey, if somebody else has a better recommendation, I'm down for it, and I might even hire them. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, over tourism and crowds are a big problem, you know, these days. So, do you see a country out there that's really kind of handling it right? You see them making the right moves, and it's really working.
Absolutely. So right now, well, actually, it opened a few years ago, but I'm not sure if you're familiar with CopenPay. But this was a new program released by the Tourism Board in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Thank you for throwing in the Denmark and clear. Oh, you mean that's Copenhagen. Okay. Not Copenhagen, Missouri. Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, you know what? There's an
I'm busted
Athens,
your
Georgia.
Balls. Come on. Let's say, like, hey, Massachusetts, we bust balls. Let's go. Hey, let's get some Dunkin' and then bust balls. That's what we
do. It's so true. But you know something? I'm telling you, United States is the most unoriginal when it comes to names. Like, so might be a Copenhagen somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
In the US. I have no idea.
Yeah, I got a whole bit on that on stage.
Seriously. Okay.
So what's Copenpay?
Yes. So CopenPay is an app that is essentially available to anyone visiting the city, and it will reward you in I guess it's more like a barter-esque system. So you get tokens or reward points for good behavior. So if you take public transportation, if you pick up trash, if you are helping or giving back again in that kind of stewardship way that we talked about, you'll be rewarded for points that then you can use towards experiences or restaurants that are associated with Kobin Pay. So they're actually paying good travel behavior.
Oh, great. But just,
I know, right?
Yeah. Don't eat on the train, though. No eating on the train and no loud radio playing.
Yeah, that's where you get points deducted. Yeah.
Right. But it's also, it's kind of easier for that. I mean, Denmark is a, you know, it's a wealthy nation.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you see something like back to Thailand again, something that's, can be very crowded, very crowded. And, you know, if a poorer nation can make it work, that's pretty good. I mean, do you see anybody out there kind of like, I've heard of like carbon credits you get, like green travel and stuff. I mean, do you see any of that or like helping animals? You go work at a sanctuary and stuff. Did you go to the elephant sanctuary there and help?
I did go to an elephant sanctuary. Oh, yeah. And it broke my heart. Yeah. But I did. Yeah. So you're totally right. I mean, I think there's no one perfect solution, and over tourism manifests in different ways in different places. So I think different places have different things that they need. For example, in Bali, I've heard of like orchestrated beach cleanups that have worked really well. That's not so much a tourism board associated thing, but more people are just setting them up on like Facebook groups, which is also very cool. So you can already see an initiative by travelers doing these good things while they're on vacation. But yeah, as you said, there's some like voluntourism that you could do that might be a little bit more short term. So perhaps better than the long-term voluntourism options.
I've heard of stuff like maybe like sometimes rebuilding the reef, you know, from divers and things like that. The Bali thing I had heard too, because, you know, people come from around the world to go to Bali, and then you go there and there's trash all over the beach, and it's just like, oh, the bummer. I remember I was in Goa in India, the same kind of thing. And just like, you know what? I would go out there and pick up trash if you guys aren't going to do it. Right? I mean, I do it here in LA, you know, I'll do it here. And you think there'd be a way to incentivize the locals to help out. I mean, there's a cultural thing as well. But if you can, you know, if I remember thinking, if all the hotels on the beach chipped in something every week, you could just pay a bunch of locals to just every 2 hours just comb the beach and just pick up the crap.
That's but, hey, and you know, that's also an interesting idea. Like, why not have if a hotel is orchestrating a beach cleanup, like, wouldn't you do it? I would totally do it.
Like, so you go you know? There, you know, pick up trash for an hour, you get, you know, two free cocktails. I'm like, all right.
Heck yeah. Yeah. that would be amazing.
Right? I mean, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. So you're doing this. Did you ever, you have a staff now? Did you tell me that? Do you have people contributing?
I have people contributing, and I do some work. Well, you know, I would say I'm a bit more of a one woman person or team, let's say.
one woman person. Good.
One woman team, but it's I do have some freelancers who help me here and there, but surprisingly enough, I wanted to own the website, so I've done a pretty fair share of things that I would not expect me to be able to do, like coding, for example.
Wow. Impressive.
That was unexpected. Yeah. So, you know, there's these things that I try to do on my own. And then if I really can't figure something out, I'll hire a freelancer, or I have some folks that I've worked with more on a temporary basis. But yeah.
So for somebody else trying to start a blog, not that you want any competition, but what advice would you give to someone else who's where you were, I don't know, 5 years ago?
Yeah, very good question. So I think one of the challenges that I had, and as I've told you, a big part of it came down to like really figuring out where I wanted to fit in this space, because there are so many different bloggers and content creators in tourism and travel, which is so great. But I think being very clear about who your audience is and what value you're giving to them early on would really have you be miles ahead of the average person starting a blog. being able to just figure that out early on will give you that clarity to know, okay, well, rather than write a blog that I want to read, what's a blog that they want to read? So that's a big difference, okay. I think. Yeah.
So where do you see it headed? What, like, if you have, you look in the crystal ball into the future, what's your ultimate goal for the site?
Yes, absolutely. So my next step is I'm building a community page. It would be a membership page. So it's essentially a space where travelers can connect with each other and gain instant, easy access with people from all over the world. As we talked about, like, conduct or orchestrate some opportunities for stewardship in the places that they're going to, and just make it a really easy process for people to give back. I will also have some tutorials on there for people who are looking to maybe gain a little bit more awareness about how to travel authentically and do good when they're visiting places. So if someone like me who, like, let's say 5 years ago is just starting out, this would be a good landing spot for them.
Oh, great. So top of your bucket list, where do you want to go next? Where are you dying to go that you haven't been?
Oh, I love it. Vietnam. Oh, okay. I really want to go to Vietnam. Yeah.
It's great.
I'm dying. I would love to go to Vietnam. I think it's so beautiful. And all of the photos I've seen, it just seem absolutely stunning. And I mean, I know that this is like the typical thing to say, but I'm like obsessed with Vietnamese food. So yeah.
The food is great. The beaches are great. But again, if you can start a trash pickup there, again, that'd be a great idea.
I'll work on it. I'll see. Maybe that'll be the first meetup on the community page. We'll see if that works out.
Yeah, that was the only downside to the beaches.
Oh, okay.
To me, anyway.
Good to know.
Because again, we're getting to a poorer country, and the trash removal and disposal is not, the infrastructure is not there. So a lot of people still burn their trash on the side of the road. You know, so there's a lot of that, and it's just that a lot of people just treat rivers and waterways kind of like, you know, dumps, you know, too. So, but it's great. I mean, you would love it. I know you would love it. Yeah. So when you, let's say that trip is coming up, you booked Vietnam, how much time do you give yourself? 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month? I mean, how do you keep it authentic, and how much time does it take to be authentic? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's a good question as well. I think the perfect amount of time to go somewhere is a month, but I know that that's not always possible for people.
Americans
specifically, yes. If you can work from there, do it. And that's what I would do at least. So I try to dedicate a few hours so I don't, you know, necessarily have to take all this PTO off. That's how I would do it. But I think a month is great. And if you can go longer, sure, why not? But to answer your question, though, if you want to travel authentically, I don't think you need to necessarily be there for months or years. I think you could really get a good feel for a place just with some good behavior and, you know, the right mindset in, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks. I think that would be a good spot.
That is good. I talked to a lot of digital nomads on here. And was that something you would ever consider? Would you like to, like, you lived abroad for a year, would you like to try it again?
Absolutely. Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I have this kind of partial desire to have a place to settle in, but then I also have this very big interest of traveling more and seeing more of the world. So I think, yeah, I would be definitely open to being a digital nomad at some point.
Vietnam, very popular for that. And Thailand.
Oh. Okay.
I interviewed a gal who's in Da Nang in Vietnam right now.
Oh,
and one of the appeals is it's very cheap. And it's cheaper for us, than Thailand for sure. Cheaper than Thailand and things like that.
Like, for an American, this is great news, you know?
Oh, yeah. Everything's pretty much cheaper there, except Copenhagen.
Except for Copenhagen. Yeah.
Copenhagen, Oslo, anything up
anywhere
there.
You're gonna, the Euro and
Iceland, you're going to pay.
You are going to pay in Iceland. Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's get to the fun stuff now. Let me give me your craziest flight, like your most memorable flight ever.
Oh, man. Okay, most memorable flight. I would say that was, so the first time that I, When I was in college, I traveled abroad to Madrid for a summer program there. And when I was on the flight, I sat beside this woman who was maybe like 85 or so, I'm guessing. And she was like the most interesting person ever. She was talking like, I was really not like sure what to expect from her, but she just kind of like turned over to me and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, where are you going? Spain and blah, blah, blah. And I just like started talking to her and she's like, oh yeah, I'm going to go to Spain for, I just divorced my husband. And so I'm going to go to Spain and just like do a little solo trip. And then I'm going to go up to Switzerland and do some skiing and blah, blah. I'm like, oh my God.
First of all, doing all that stuff at her age. Second of all, getting divorced at that age. Usually 100%. She's a widow. I mean, I don't know how
well. 100%. You know, it's like, really? 85?
85. Yeah, it's like, this is not working out. We should see other people
I'm
at 85.
Done. Yeah. Yeah. So I was honestly just like flabbergasted by her because I was just like, oh, wow, it's never too late for anything, you know?
I got to interview her. Give me her number. If she's still around, I got to talk to her.
Seriously. And I think that's kind of one of the core things too about travel is that at least for me, the most memorable things have been revolving other people who have been very interesting that I've met. And so this was exactly that. I just thought she was so unique and cool because, you know, my grandma is not that cool. Yeah.
Yeah. She's not listening.
Sorry,
don't worry.
Grandma, but yeah.
See, I started a whole podcast talking to interesting people. See, so it works out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. How about the craziest thing you've eaten? Somewhere.
Okay. I have eaten a lot of interesting things. I would say actually senakji in South Korea. So that is octopus sashimi. And essentially what you do is you chop the tentacles off of the octopus when it's alive, unfortunately. And the octopus tentacles are still kind of wriggling. And you essentially have it with a garlic sauce, which is quite tasty, actually. Mm-hmm. The garlic sauce is really nice. But yeah, you eat them while they're still freshly moving. And the tentacles work, so they kind of stick to your cheeks.
Oh, no!
Yeah. It's definitely a different experience. A lot of people love it. And I don't know if I would order it again. But I'm not going to knock someone's delicious.
Well, you know,
taste,
the ultimate fear is that the suction cup stops right in your throat or something.
Yeah, and maybe it could happen. They say to chew it really well, so it could potentially happen. Yeah.
No, thank you. How about any kind of run-ins with police or cops or border patrol? Mm-hmm. You had to bribe anybody?
I've never had to bribe anybody. Okay. No, I'm a good girl. I'm a good, I've never had a run in with a cop, but one time, so there are these neck pillows that you can basically put like your clothing in. I had a neck pillow in Peru that had all of my hiking gear because basically I was going on a train and going to Cusco. And then that morning at 4 a.m., I was going to go to Rainbow Mountain. So in an effort to not like rifle through my suitcase, I just put all of my hiking gear in my neck pillow. But then I left my neck pillow on the train.
Oh.
Yeah. So I had to run back to the train and I, you know, running back, I just dropped my backpack and stuff at the hotel and left my passport there. So when I got back to the train station, I realized I didn't have any identification on me. And the guy was like, yeah, I'm not giving you anything. I have no idea who you are. I can't even like confirm that you were on this train, you know? And so in broken Spanish, I was like, please, sir. Like, I can't.
Por favor.
I was almost in tears. Like, I was really like so tired too. And I had to wake up in like 3 hours to go to Rainbow Mountain. So eventually I think he felt a bit of empathy and just gave me the neck pillow and was like, get out of here, please. Like, so,
well, it's amazing they had it. I mean, it's amazing. That thing just didn't walk off by itself, you know?
It was, I guess somebody was not interested in wool socks and cargo pants. So yeah,
no fashion plates there.
Yeah. They just opened up. They're like, nah.
Yeah. How about any injuries or food poisoning or anything like that?
Oh yeah. Well, when I was in Korea, I did have a couple of injuries. One time I don't know what happened exactly, but I had some sort of infection in my eyelid. This is a really weird story actually, because, I took antibiotics and the swelling was like almost like golf ball size out of my eye. It was bad and I couldn't see out of this eye. And so of course I'm like a teacher at that time. And so I was like, I don't think I can teach today. You know, like I literally can't see out of this eye. So I took these antibiotics, the swelling went down a little bit, but not fully. And so I went to an eye doctor, and mind you, my Korean has never been particularly good. So I just tried to explain the situation, and then the doctor tried to explain the situation to me, which was that he was going to have to like cut open my eyelid and like drain it. Which I didn't fully get, but I just kind of was like, okay. And then he just like laid me down and very quickly like injected my eyelid with a like basically, I don't know what you call those. What's the word for like the thing, like Novocaine?
Oh,
like
yeah. Just to numb it.
Basically just to numb my eye and not feel it. And I was like, oh, he's injecting my eye with something. Oh, what's happening now? And then he just like took out a scalpel and was like,
oh,
just like sliced my eyelid. And meanwhile, I didn't really know what was happening because I couldn't totally understand what he had said. So the nurse was just like holding my hand, like, it's going to be okay. Like, don't worry. And I was like, oh my God, trying not to freak out.
You're like a boxer in the corner getting cut.
Seriously. Yeah. It was really an outrageous experience for someone who just was like going into an eye doc. Like, you know, I was just thinking like they were going to give me another antibiotic, and he's like, I'm going to cut your eye open.
Oh, so, man. Good morning. I was not prepared. Yeah. That's
was funny. Not expecting it, but wow. fun fact, if you do get some sort of procedure in South Korea, sometimes they'll give you like a stuffed animal to hold on to. So you know, even if you're like an adult at a doctor's office, they do have like some stuffed animals too to soothe you. So
now this is depressing as an American. Did you even get a bill for that, and was it like $20?
Oh, I think most people would cry. It was like $15 to get it done.
Oh man. Yeah. 20 was too high. I was joking.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Yeah, that kind of thing would like put you in financial ruin here, but
God. That's so great.
It was incredible. One of those things where you're just like, "Oh man, what's going on in the US?" You know?
Yeah. We don't have nearly enough time to get to that, but
yeah.
So actually, we need to get to your plugs now. So tell us the name of the site and all the socials, and where can people find you?
Absolutely. So easy peasy, it's Earth2 Editorial and earth2editorial.com. And then across all social media, earth2editorial.com. And the two is T-O. So just spell it on out.
How did you navigate social media when you're saying, I'm going to start this blog? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do I post every day? Is Instagram going to be my thing? Am I a TikTok person? Are we going to do photos and video or just photos? How did you navigate that? And how still do you navigate it?
Yeah. When I first started out, I was doing just photos because I was, to be honest, a bit intimidated by video. But I've grown into loving video. I think it's such a great medium, especially for travel writers or creators in the space, because you know, I think that it grows this other space of feeling like you're there. So this is something that I think is great. And I'm leaning into it more now. I would say the vast majority of what I post these days are video. And so I focused primarily on Instagram before, but I'm having a lot more success right now on YouTube and TikTok. So that's where I'm investing most of my time.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I'm posting about 3 to 4 times a week. As far as the strategy, it's something where I'm using, let's say a cross between what is going to be consistently doable for me. I would love to post every day, but I think it would just drive me nuts if I did. So I'm doing what is reasonable and possible. And then as well, something to just kind of keep people coming back. So
yeah, you're a one woman team. You only have so many
exactly
hours of the day.
Exactly. Yes. I'm usually at like 8 a.m. editing videos. So it's, yeah, a bit maddening. I can't wait to pass it on to someone else. So
when's your next trip? When's the next one?
Good question. Right now, I don't have anything planned because, as I think I told you before, I have a TED Talk coming up. Which I'm so thrilled about. But I have that in October, and I've been basically putting the majority of my energy and focus on that. And once that's done, I will figure it out. But maybe Vietnam. Who knows?
There you go. So TED Talk is about authentic travel or about your site specifically?
About authentic travel, yes. So the TED Talk is about how to become a better traveler and basically giving back to the destinations that we visit and chasing authenticity.
So by the end of October, people could see that TED Talk.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Awesome. Where are you doing it?
I'm doing it in Manchester, New Hampshire. So if anyone wants to go see that live, they certainly can buy tickets. It's TEDx Amoskmeeg Milliard. And then the other option too is you can see it live, or sorry, you could see it recorded on YouTube afterwards.
Perfect. And yeah, October in New Hampshire, you know what else is going on there?
Yes. Yes.
The leaves are changing.
I know.
Good this timing.
I was thinking about that, actually. I was trying to figure out how I could go back up to maybe no longer Lincoln. I've got my tourist bill, so maybe now I'll find a local spot to go visit.
A more authentic spot.
More authentic. Exactly. Yeah.
Finally, what do you think all this travel you've done and all the places you've been around the world, and what has it taught you about people? What has it taught you about the world, and how has it changed you, and what have you learned?
That's a loaded question. I think, at least for me, tourism has made my life three-dimensional, which I think anyone can enjoy. Anyone can go outside and be happy and thankful for life. And I certainly am too. But the people in my life, the people that I've met around the world, has made this so much more bright and interesting for me. I think that if I were to have stayed in Massachusetts and never left New England, I would probably feel like I was missing something really essential in my life. So it's just to say, it's almost like that moment in, it's almost like when black and white film becomes Technicolor, and you see there's so much interesting stuff in the world. There's so many interesting people and ways to live, and there's no right or wrong way to live, which is also so cool. So I think that it's so cool to have this opportunity to be a person of the world. That's it.
Oh, you know? That's great.
And, yeah. And I don't know. I think that it's just, maybe it's a little bit sentimental for me, like just to feel like, oh, wow, you know, like we're, in the end of the day, we're all kind of the same. But it really is the truth, you know? And I think that that's such a brilliant, wonderful thing for someone to experience.
That's awesome. And a great answer. Thank you so much. Thanks. Well, this was fun. Oh, I appreciate you reaching out to me, and thank you for doing this.
My pleasure, Mike. And thanks for having me. This was great. Awesome. I really appreciate your time too.
Earth2editorial.com, right?
Yep, that's the one.
Earth2editorial.com. T-O, not the number two. T-O.
Yes, T-O. Very important.
Yeah. Aaron Gordon, everybody. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you so much.
For spontaneous travelers, winging it is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75-plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.